as 28 miles per hour. On Sunday, there will be a chance of snow showers. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 32 degrees. It will be breezy with a southwest.
My name is Kevin Van Hentenrick of the Hunter Stone Carving Seminar, and you are listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Hey, I'm Spike Priggin, host of the Bedazzled Radio Hour. Broadcast every week from 12:10 until 2 p.m. Wednesday afternoon, live from Spike's Record Rack, 400 Main Street in the village of Catskill. Every Wednesday, I play pop, rock, soul, country, blues, reggae, and other obscurities, and once in a while, a hit or two. Please check out the Bedazzled Radio Hour with Spike Priggin on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, every Wednesday from 12:10 until 2.
The Catskill Food Pantry is located in the Parish Hall of St. Luke's Episcopal Church at 50 William Street in Catskill. The pantry is open to the public every Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Healthy food is a right. For more information, please feel welcome to visit the pantry, call us at 551-299-2456, check the website at catskillfoodpantry.org, or connect with us on Facebook at Catskill Food Pantry.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Bridge Street Theater.
Though he seemed loyal in public, he worked behind the scenes to stir up, arouse, incite revolution.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Kevin Frey reports for New York State of Politics that Representative Mark Molinaro is refusing to criticize Representative Elise Stefanik for calling some of those arrested for participating in the attempted violent overthrow of the government on January 6, 2021, and I quote, hostages, end quote. More than 1,200 people have been charged with federal crimes for their role in the January 6 events, including trespassing and assaulting police officers. And more than 700 have pleaded guilty. Stefanik called them, and I quote, hostages, end quote, on the Meet the Press television show January 7th, after former President Donald Trump had used the same term several times. Molinaro said, and I quote, I don't judge how other members comport themselves. I haven't done that. I'm not going to start now, end quote. Actually, Molinaro was one of the representatives recently leading the charge to oust the serial liar George Santos from the House. Molinaro, who represents the 19th Congressional District, also said, and I quote, "My perspective is, by the way, every person in this country deserves due process in a public and speedy trial," end quote. And he said he and Stefanik, and I quote, "work really closely together. We have a great deal of respect for one another," end quote. Brooklyn Representative Hakeem Jeffries questioned this week why Republicans in New York, such as Molinaro, have not, and I quote, "denounced," end quote, Stefanik for her comments, and why they, and I quote, "continue to rely on her fundraising support in order to try to fool the voters in New York and pretend like they believe in moderation," end quote. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. Jeanette Wolfberg reports for the Upstater that the Columbia County Board of Supervisors passed the county's budget for 2024 on December 13th with a 1.4% tax levy increase. The budget totaled $172.4 million, a 5.6% increase from the year before. Board Chair Matt Morrell guessed that property owners, on the average, would see a tax rate decrease of 3.2% because property values in the county increased. Raymond Stats from Claremont and John Riley of Gallatin voted against the budget, with Riley saying, and I quote, "I don't like the salary increase for supervisors," end quote, and I quote, "I agree with Mr. Stats. We shouldn't be building reserves," end quote. Most supervisor salaries are increasing $1,000 a year in the budget. And you can read more about this story in the Upstater. Max Bevington reports for News 10 that Forbes magazine ranks New York as the 10th healthiest state in the nation. Northeastern states top the rankings, with Connecticut as the third healthiest state, Massachusetts in 5th, and New Jersey and New Hampshire at 7th and 8th, respectively. The magazine used 21 metrics across three major categories of risk factor: substance abuse and lifestyle habits. New York ranked 9th and 12th in the first two categories, but was 21st in the nation for substance abuse, including the misuse of alcohol, opioids, illicit drugs, and prescription pain relievers, along with drug overdose rates. West Virginia, Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Kentucky finished at the bottom of the rankings. And you can read more about this story at the News 10 website. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the Donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The nuts and bolts of Boeing's corporate crime. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. If you're flying on a Boeing, buckle up. Passengers aboard Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 on Saturday, January 5th, were lucky their seatbelts were snug when an entire side panel blew out, leaving a gaping hole in the fuselage as the plane passed 16,000 feet after taking off from Portland, Oregon. The rapid cabin depressurization tore the shirt off a teenage passenger. Several others were injured. Miraculously, no one was killed and the pilots landed safely. This Boeing 737 MAX 9 was almost brand new, but had already triggered three separate cabin pressurization warnings. Alaska Airlines decided to restrict the plane to shorter flights and not over water. If history is any guide, the answer to why the panel blew out may be simple: Boeing's long history of thwarting regulation, cutting corners, and corporate crime. Renowned consumer advocate Ralph Nader knows painfully well about Boeing's negligence. On March 10, 2019, his grandniece, Samia Rose Stumo, boarded Ethiopian Airlines Flight 302. The Boeing 737 MAX 8 was only 4 months old. Minutes after takeoff, the plane nosedived and crashed, killing all 157 people on board. This was the second fatal crash of a Boeing 737 MAX 8 following the October 29, 2018 crash of Lion Air Flight 610 in Indonesia that claimed the lives of all 189 passengers and crew on board.
Sammy was extraordinary. She was an emerging leader in global health in her early 20s.
Ralph Nader said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour, coincidentally just hours before the Boeing MAX 9 blowout on the Alaska Airlines flight occurred.
It was a huge loss at the time when she went down with 146 other people right outside Addis Ababa in Ethiopia due to Boeing's criminal design of the Boeing 737 MAX.
Immediately after the Flight 302 crash in 2019, Samia's mother, Nadja Milleron, anguished, raced with family members to the scene seeking answers. Since then, Nadja has become a tireless advocate for airline safety and for holding Boeing accountable.
There are serious, serious problems with these MAX planes, and they have caused near accidents on repeated occasions.
Milleron said on Democracy Now! After the Alaska Airlines blowout. Nadja explained one method Boeing recently used to skirt federal oversight.
Boeing is trying to evade safety regulations. Last year, in December of 2022, they went to Congress because the FAA wouldn't. All the safety regulations are written in blood. All of them are there because people have died. So that's the regulation is a response to the death and trying to prevent more deaths. So Boeing went to Congress, and through the Military Authorization Act, they got another exemption for themselves.
Boeing introduced the 737 commercial airliner in 1967, more than half a century ago, and it quickly became a workhorse of passenger aviation. Boeing rushed the updated 737 MAX series, the MAX 7, 8, 9, and 10, to compete with Airbus, the European consortium, which released its own updated Airbus 320 with remarkable success.
Everything was being rushed.
Ed Pearson recalled on Democracy Now! He's executive director of the Foundation for Aviation Safety and a former senior manager at Boeing, who was at Boeing when the MAX 8 was in production.
We had a shortage of skilled employees. We were having all kinds of issues with quality problems. There was just incredible schedule pressure. There's a saying in the factory, they call it, schedule is king. And as we were going through those types of issues, myself and others, you know, verbalized our concerns, and we did our best to try to stop the production system at that point. And unfortunately, we were sadly unable to do that.
In response to the two fatal crashes in 2018 and 2019, Ed retired from Boeing and launched the Foundation for Aviation Safety to hold to account the industry and its all too often captured regulators.
This incident with Alaska, I'm sure, is shocking to passengers. But for those of us who have been watching this for a while, it's really not a surprise at all. You know, we've seen ever since the MAX has been put back in service, over 20 serious production quality defects that have surfaced. We're not talking tray tables. We're talking about flight-related systems. And the public is unaware of this.
The panel that blew out of Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 was supposed to be held in place by four bolts. United Airlines reported it found loose bolts as it inspected its grounded 737 MAX 9s. But even if every bolt is tightened to specification, that's just, as Ed Pearson says,
actually the tip of the iceberg.
Boeing was criminally charged in the wake of the two 737 MAX 8 crashes, but negotiated a deferred prosecution agreement with the Justice Department, which Nadja Milleron says is illegal, as victims weren't consulted. Corporations that cut corners to increase profit, putting lives at risk, must be held to the same standards as anyone who harms another. Violators like Boeing need to be prosecuted to show without a doubt that corporate crime doesn't pay. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
And now, here is your WGXC weekend weather report. On Sunday, there will be a chance of snow showers. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 32 degrees. It will be breezy with a southwest wind at 17 to 20 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 31 miles an hour. And on Sunday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 16 degrees. And on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 28 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
We're talking with Lisa Marshall, who is Director of Organizing and Advocacy for New Yorkers for Clean Power. And earlier this week, in Governor Hochul's State of the State address, many climate activists were quite excited that she announced support for what is known as the New York Heat Act, at least key portions of it, which is one of the major initiatives that climate activists, Renewable Heat Now campaign, has been promoting for the last few years. So Lisa, can you maybe just give us a quick introduction? What is New Yorkers for Clean Power? And then, you know, what did Governor Hochul said that warmed a lot of people's hearts?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So the New York Heat Act, HEAT stands for Home Energy Affordable Transition. And this is such an important law to pass for to move our climate plan forward. The sort of short and pithy description is cleaner heat and lower bills. That's what the New York Heat Act does. And it basically is going to align our public service law with the climate law. And it will do three key things for New Yorkers. It's going to lower utility bills, especially for lower and middle income families. It's going to help us fight climate change, and it's going to create green jobs and healthy homes. So the New York Heat Act is something we've been advocating for now. This is our third year trying to get it passed. It is quite a difficult bill to completely understand and to pass. The fossil fuel industry has been lobbying and spreading misinformation to try to stop this bill from passing, but we have incredible momentum going into this year. And Governor Hochul's support is absolutely pivotal and important for us to get it passed in the budget.
Now, we have had probably four or five stories about the New York Heat Act. A lot of people know it as the 100-foot rule to basically stop allowing people to hook up, expand gas pipelines for free, big subsidy if they're within 100 feet. But one of the other big things was to try to cap the size of utility bills, particularly for low and, I guess, moderate income people, at 6% of their income. That part did not pass. And to be honest, for a lot of legislators, that was what they were using to try to promote it, to the average, voter. Are there other things that Hochul might be pursuing with respect to trying to make sure that this transition is affordable, particularly for low and moderate income people?
Yes, and you're right, Mark. She didn't put the 6% household limit of income for utility bills into her state proposal, but she did talk about energy affordability. She made some specific recommendations that would make it more affordable, especially for households that move to electrification. That means, heating and cooling with heat pumps instead of with fossil fuel systems. We don't want that to make people's bills go up. And some other, proposals that would help manage utility bill affordability for folks. But we do really need more. We already have very unaffordable utility, energy costs for our low-income folks in New York, and we need as much relief as we can possibly get. And we do intend to fight very hard for the affordability piece to be in the final budget through the One House budgets. We'll see what happens in the legislature next. We do expect and hope that the Senate will pass the bill as it is, as they've done the last couple of years. And the real fight now is in the Assembly to make sure that all of these pieces, the fossil fuel subsidies that we're trying to end, that the governor's supporting, the obligation to serve, which, you know, basically means that the gas utilities have to keep building more gas pipes and instead of building some of the thermal energy networks and renewable solutions that we know we need, and the affordability cap. I will just say, too, that ending the 100-foot rule and changing the obligation to serve, these are also affordability measures, but they're not ones people will feel in their pocketbooks right away. Basically, what they're doing is avoiding future costs that would be absolutely prohibitive. So it's a little tricky to talk about future costs that are avoided because people don't see their bill go down, but it would be horrifying to see bills go up the way they're projected to if we don't pass this act. So there's two kinds of, or several kinds of affordability folded into this one bill.
Now, the state of the state is sort of the good news exercise, almost like a Kant's pain speech. You talk about the good things, and then the real details come out on the budget bills, which is, in this case, is coming out, I believe, on the 16th. You know, when we talk about trying to make sure that the rules for the Public Service Commission, which one of the things to do is oversees utilities in New York State, actually align with the goals of the climate law, the CLCPA, to reduce emissions. You mentioned a few of them, but, you know, what is that process going to look like? And what are some of the things that, you know, climate advocates hope that the Public Service Commission begins to, you know, change its position on?
Yeah, well, the Public Service Commission right now is in the process of asking all of the utilities who provide gas to submit plans on how they're going to comply with this, with the climate law, with the CLCPA, right? But right now, the Public Service Commission is limited because we haven't passed the New York Heat Act. So they can't tell utilities to take our money to put it into heat pumps and thermal energy networks, because our law says that it's in the interest of New Yorkers for the utilities to provide them with gas. It doesn't say provide them with essential energy services. That's what it should say, right? Because gas was, it's just one kind of energy service. So it's really important to pass the New York Heat Act. This will actually give the PSC, or the Public Service Commission, the authority to direct the utilities to put in gas plans that are truly compliant with our climate law, instead of trying to put forward, you know, continue pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into the gas system for decades to come and continuing that those gas emissions for decades to come. We really need real solutions that get us off gas. And of course, the utilities don't want to give us those real solutions. So the PSC needs the New York Heat Act to pass. It's not really just their decision. They need this policy to change so that they have more power to do that.
Now, as I said, the budget's coming out next week, and there's also other legislative matters. Are there other, you know, key issues that Renewable Heat Now campaign or New York as a Clean Power in the last 2 minutes are hoping to see, you know, either the governor or the state legislators advance during this session?
Yeah, the Renewable Heat Now campaign is, which is, as you know, is a campaign made up of many, many organizations. We are laser focused on the New York Heat Act for the budget. That said, we really want to see a fund being created for affordable pre-electrification. That's like, say you have a house that you would like to put a heat pump into, but it just can't support that renewable energy system because it doesn't have the insulation, and it can't get the insulation because there's problems with the house. Maybe there's lead or mold or old wiring, and there's no fund to make those upgrades for homes. And that's a real barrier for many people. So this is something we're working on legislation for. It's not quite been introduced yet.
And I will point out is that, and I believe buildings are actually the largest source of greenhouse emissions in the state.
Absolutely. And that's why we're so focused on building decarbonization, Marcus, because if you include the emissions from burning fossil fuels in buildings, plus the methane that leaks, it is absolutely the biggest source of carbon emissions in New York. And the other things that we'd like to see are, you know, the governor did put some money towards the Empower Plus program to get more money out to low-income households for weatherization. We'd like to continue to see those things year after year.
We've been talking with Lisa Marshall from the New Yorkers for Clean Power, the Renewable Heat Now campaign, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
John Sturman from the Ukuleles Unleashed show has a special announcement about the
ukulele. Oh, the ukulele Unleashed.
Ooh, do your thing.
So Ukuleles Unleashed, we do our show every third Tuesday at between 8 and 10. And this year, all of 24, we're going to be doing it live at the Bridge Street Theater. With an audience.
At the same time? No. You're going to change the time?
No, at the same time.
8 to 10.
So 8 to 10 on the third Tuesday of the month. Come on out to the Bridge Street Theater.
Where is that located?
This coming Tuesday.
What's the address of that?
West Bridge Street, next to the high school entrance, across from the juice bar.
There
and
you go.
Stewart's.
Yep, near Stewart's, yes. And it's a beautiful theater.
It's live.
It'll be live.
Is it a new theater?
No, they've been around. They've been here for a while.
Okay. That was a place that was supposed to turn into a whole performance studio, right? Yeah. Okay.
No,
the Bridge Street Theater does great plays year round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're incorporating us into their schedule. You know, there will be things on the main stage, but we're going to be in the cabaret part. So
cabaret,
sort of the lobby, I guess, but it'll be a nice space.
And so it's this Tuesday, starting this Tuesday.
This
the 16th.
Coming Tuesday, 8 o'clock.
The 16th.
Yes, and all are welcome.
And John's partner, Carmen. Also
Carmen Borgia.
The great Carmen Borgia.
He does another show called...
The Mosquito. And that will be on this coming Monday night, so the 15th.
Also live at the Bridge Street Theater. Yeah. This Monday at 10 p.m., you can come out live. It's a variety comic.
Cool. It's a great conversation with great storytellers and good comedians.
You're going to make me come out of my house.
No, you can listen on the air because we're on the radio.
Oh, yeah, but damn. Like, to be in the audience
would be
crazy.
To the audience. Cool. I mean, having live radio is really cool.
It's impressive. It's like it's a barometer change.
Yeah. And okay. So, you know, we're generally the way we do our Ukuleles Unleashed show is that the first hour is Carmen, and he brings together some friends of his, and they'll perform.
Carmen is a boy.
Carmen is a man.
A man, yes.
And he's a terrific
man. My daughter's
man.
Name is Carmen.
We had him
right.
on the show.
I know.
And so he'll put together, he'll either play solo or put together a little group, and they'll go through a bunch of songs for the first hour, and it's live and real. It's fabulous.
Real.
Real.
I like how you
as
said that.
As opposed to, you know, a stage performance.
Digital
it really
and
is,
all that,
it's like
right.
sitting in the living room with Carmen and friends. And I feel very fortunate because I get to actually do sit in the living room with him while
cool.
they're playing.
Okay.
And then the second hour is me playing recordings from around the world of ukuleles.
Cool. Ukulele.
Ukulele world.
Worldwide ukuleles.
Worldwide ukuleles. And there's all sorts of genres of ukulele music. Ukulele is just an instrument, you know, and you can do everything from jazz to rock and roll to... folk to whatever, and we have
my BFF the whole Stephen Merritt plays the ukulele.
Yes, he does.
Good for you. You think saying BFF is going to intimidate me?
No,
I've got BFFs too.
Well, you know, I just want to you know put it out there so people don't think I'm
shallow.
That I'm just promoting him.
Oh,
you know, I got to put it up front. You know,
I guess I don't know if nobody asked you, but I guess
I know, right?
Right, right.
So
anyway,
so having this live allows us to bring in more players.
Cool.
More players.
Players.
And so, you know, one of the things ukulele players like to do is get a lot of ukulele players in the room, and we all play together.
Okay.
And so
it's not going to be a clash having different ukuleles all playing at once?
No, we're playing the same song. It would be a clash if we played different songs. That would be really bad.
Just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah. you know, and we play in the same key and make sure our ukuleles are tuned and, you know, all that stuff so it's not pandemonium.
Nice.
And so, you know, this is the second time that we've done a live show.
Okay.
And so I'm pretty excited about it.
Very excited. Give us the details one more time.
So it's going to be Tuesday the 16th.